Hit the noon hour, 12:02. Mark Melusis with you. It's a Melusis Monday. Happy Labor Day, one and all. In for BT and Sal as you take you for the next couple hours right up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Want to thank our friends at Town Fair Tire. They remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires you trust from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire, and I mean nobody. Let's head out to Yonkers, kicking off the noon hour. It's Dennis. It's the fan. What's going on, Dennis?
Mark, how are you again? I didn't hear you promote yesterday, so I was pleasantly surprised. I turned the car radio on, and you're on. So I bored your audience for a long time yesterday, so I'll be quick here. But
Dennis. That's not true.
Quick baseball point. But something that pertains to football Giants. Why do you think your commie defense? Now it was bad against the run last year, but why are you down on their defense? Because they made a couple of good signings and drafted, I think, a corner who I had a low first-round grade on. They took him in the second round.
Well, I think I look at it where I'm more a case of, to me, it's getting after the quarterback than anything else.
Right.
That's where I look at Washington and their struggles to be able to generate a consistent rush. I do like what they've done in the offseason. I don't think the defense is going to be the strength of the team, and that's where I think teams could be able to move on it. But listen, I think Daniels with McLaurin now signing that $96 million contract. You throw in Debo Samuel. They traded Brian Robinson to clean up that running back room a little bit to San Francisco. Offensive line should be a little bit better with Laremy Tunsil at the left tackle position. So you look at offensively, and especially with the brilliance of Daniels, I think they're going to be able to move the ball. I just get concerned about the D.
Yeah, the counter to that is Giants need Andrew Thomas on the field. And if he's not, that kind of elevates the pass rush for the skins or the commies somewhat. So we'll see. I mean, I'll be looking for that. But you signed a couple of good corners in Harris and Jones, and you got Marshawn Lattimore too. So I think you can run on them, and if they can't get to the quarterback, then that's a problem because you can only cover for so long. Okay, so my baseball point, I heard when I got in the car, I heard you talking about pitchers. And I remember what a former Giant pitching coach who threw a no-hitter for the Yankees told me a long time ago, Dave Righetti. He said, and I never thought of it this way, you go out there, and you know this saying, you go out there with your A stuff 10 times, your B stuff 10 times, your C stuff 10 times. And it's what you do with your B and C stuff. Did you catch Justin Verlander's game yesterday? Did you see what he did?
I did not. I missed it. I'm sorry, Dennis.
Okay. So five innings, I'll fill you in. Why would you be watching it, except unless you're a demented Giant fan like me?
Yeah.
five innings of shutout ball, 121 pitches, 4 walks, 10 strikeouts. He went out for the fifth inning with 94 pitches. It speaks to what you were talking about. Not finding yourself, digging down deep, and that's what the guys aren't allowed to do today. Now, the only reason he was going out there, and Melvin said he never even spoke to him in the dugout. He was going out for the fifth inning at 94 pitches, is because he's chasing 300. He is hell-bent on getting 300 wins. I don't know how he's going to do it. He's got 365, I think, now, and he's 42 years old. But he's hell-bent on doing it. And he topped at 94 yesterday. He still has pretty good stuff. He doesn't have the put-away stuff, though, which counts for all the foul balls yesterday. Amazingly, there was never a man on third base yesterday. But in the five innings, there were two men on, first and second, 3 times. And he gutted his way through it, pitched out of it. His last 2 outs were strikeouts, 1 on a hook, 1 on a chain.
Here's my question. If that game wasn't such a onslaught, I think you won by 10, right? I mean, I think you scored 13-2, right? So if that game wasn't, you know, we're going to do whatever we can to get you through 5 innings. Do you think Verlander, if that's a 3-2 game at that stage, do you think he's going out for the fifth?
Good question. I think so. I think so, but a much shorter leash.
Right.
You know, maybe the two guys get on, and he doesn't get to finish it because they're still trying to win. Now, speaking to what I think was Richard that was just on, what he was saying. The Reds are, I'd love to say my Giants have a shot. They have no shot. Next to no shot. Let me put it that way. The Reds are the only team that can run down the Mets, I think. Giants lost a season series to the Mets, even though they're five behind them. They're actually 5.5. So, and it's just virtually, it's really hard. It's like a 1% shot. But the Reds have three games, as you know, coming up this weekend with the Mets, and they're four out. So they have a legitimate shot right now. That's the one team.
No, I think Richard was talking. I wouldn't disagree with you. I just don't. I don't know, even, and this is coming off the Mets dropping 3 or 4 to Miami. So, like, you know, they couldn't, you know, once again, that National League East is gone. So, I think, and the Mets have played 4-13 baseball over the last 68 games. Right. So, like, you look at it, there's more of a case of wanting to see something that maybe not necessarily is there with the New York Mets, and basically what they have shown you here for a long stretch of the baseball regular season. And maybe it's just a false bravado when it comes to the Mets. I don't think the Reds are going to be able to track them down, but that's going to be a big weekend set coming up next weekend.
No, but what you say is accurate. I mean, but nobody, basically all the teams chasing were playing 468 also. That was the problem. So your point is the perspective. That's the right perspective. Are the Mets a result making the playoffs? If they do, if they fight off the Reds, is it because of the paucity of wins from the teams chasing them and the poor play, or is it, you know, the fact that they earned it? Now you earn it, but there's a way to go in and there's a way to go in. Still, when you get there, I don't think it's a crapshoot, but when you get there, you have to find a formula for yourself to win. And the one problem for them right now, as everybody knows, is the starting pitching, though McClain looks like a godsend for them.
Oh, McClain looks like an answer. The rest of them, I mean, are terrible. I mean, they just are. I mean, you know, and I wouldn't say that rest of them. I would say give Holmes some credit. The Mets, you could even make the argument, looking at the Mets, sitting here on this Labor Day, Mets are lucky they're still in the, you know, still leading for that third and final wild card spot in the National League. Given the fact that, you know, Reds got swept away by the Dodgers, had a long series against the Dodgers. Giants have disappointed this year. You know, the Mets were able to build up and have a little room to play with, but they play bad baseball for quite some time here, and that starting rotation, a massive concern. Bridgewater, New Jersey, we go. It's Anthony. What's going on, Anthony?
So, Moose, Anthony, how are you doing? Thanks for taking my call, man.
You got it, Anthony. What's on your mind, buddy?
Yeah, just really bummed out by the Mets right now. You can't get any worse than this past week as far as being ups and downs of a Mets fan. You take three from the Phillies and really laid a dud this week. And really, to me, it comes down to the pitching. And the pitching, I feel like the whole year, early on, was pitching over their heads, if you will. I mean, you want to say Peterson's okay, I guess. Senga has not been good since his rookie year. And you want to talk about no pressure situations? They were terrible his rookie year, so it's easy pitching good when there's half the stadium's filled and you're, I don't know, 60 and 70. But now that the fact that the Mets are good and relevant in July and August, he's been terrible. He cannot get another start this year. He can't.
Can I ask you, when the opponents were hitting .198 against him in six starts in May, and he was pitching to an under 2 ERA, he was terrible?
No, he wasn't. He was fine, but there's something that's happened. And listen, you got to go. What's going on right now?
You started and say, "Well, you're concerned about the Mets starters. That the only time Kodai Senga has ever been good is his rookie year. That's really not. He was good to start the season. He has not been good since he suffered the hamstring injury after the bad throw from Alonso coming off the IL. I agree with you there. To start this year, he was one of the better pitchers in the National League.
Yeah, it's easy to be good in May when there's no kind of pressure. I'm just saying right now, when the team needs him, every time he's gotten the ball, he's laid an egg. Every time.
Yeah, Anthony, he's not alone. I mean, Manaea has not been good. You know, Clay Holmes has been more consistent than Manaea and Senga, and that's a problem.
Manaea at least was a little better against the Phillies last outing. Okay?
What about Peterson on Saturday against the Marlins, who showed you a little fight?
Listen, it's going to be hard. It's hard to knock Peterson for as good he's been this year. You'll have to have a bat outing.
Well, his ERA in August was 6, nearly 7.
Okay, so, all right, so they all suck. I love you, Moose. Have a good day, man.
I appreciate the call. I appreciate it. At least, you know, you got to laugh. I mean, and listen, You know, yeah, at least tomorrow night we get to watch Nolan McLean on the mound for the Mets in Detroit against the Tigers. At least we get that. Let's head out to Bayshore. It's Chris. It's the fam. What's going on, Chris?
Yeah, hey, Moose. How are you?
Good, Chris. What's on your mind, buddy?
Well, nothing much. I'm just really excited to see these two down the stretch. I was wondering what you thought were the biggest question marks for each team going down to the last 25 games.
Yeah, I think for the Mets, it's the starting rotation. They got to figure it out. And not just figure it out. Some of the answers have got to come from within. So we're past the MLB trade deadline, and we've seen an answer in McLean. We'll see what Tong is, start number two. You know, it's just, and you hope that maybe a little fatigue with Peterson, he's able to turn around in the month of September. But there is legit concern when you're looking at Senga and you're looking at Minaya. And serious concern when you're looking at Kodai Senga. So starting rotation to me is the massive concern for the Mets. If Helsley was tipping pitches, and that's why he was dreadful after coming over for St. Louis, and now they've resolved that issue, maybe he gets back to being that eighth inning guy the Mets envisioned when they acquired him from St. Louis. The offense has turned a corner. You look at it, we don't have to get into the conversation about Juan Soto. Since July 29th with runners in scoring position, I think he's hitting like north of 370. So he's had some big moments and some big hits here, and I do think he'll hit in the month of October. As far as the Yankees are concerned, I think it starts with the rotation. Heel, positive start in a loss yesterday. Tough loss in Chicago, 3-2. Left 10 men on base, 1-for-5 in runners in scoring position. Talkman stealing a home run from Giancarlo Stanton. But Heel taking a step forward. I think you want to see Judge, if he can, and I don't know if he can. You know, I think, you know, Aaron Boone, when he was on with BT and Sal, said a little bit too much, said the stuff that was being said behind the scenes out loud, and then quickly walked that back. But you'd love to see Judge be able to play the outfield at some point in time here the rest of the way. And I think for the Yankees, you want to see them show a little bit of a pulse next 12 games against teams like Houston, Detroit, Toronto, and Boston.
Yeah, I think that's a good point against the better teams. And I think that the Yankees give you a little bit more question marks defensively, too. You want to see things kind of get a little bit
short. Well, against good teams, yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, we could really dig down on the Yankees. And I know there are a lot of Yankee fans that think I hear you guys. I see you guys on social media think I, you know, expound too much negativity when it comes to the Bombers. It's not really the case. I get frustrated when I watch the Yankees play sloppy baseball, play a bad brand of baseball. It's tough to watch when they're giving teams extra outs and they're not sound defensively or sound fundamentally. Because to me, there's no excuse for that when you're in the major leagues.
Yeah, I just think it's obviously an exciting time, but at the same time, being a fan of either one of those teams kind of leaves you with a lot of question marks too, a lot of angst as you're watching these games.
Yeah, well, we had John Morosi on the other day, who does a great job on MLB Network, Fox. And from his opinion, he thinks it's, you know, it's wide open. So, you know, we're sitting here on Labor Day on this Monday doing a midday show right here on the FAN. And, you know, things have got to break your way. And, you know, I made the argument last week, I think the Mets are a little bit more dangerous. But the rotation, it's not survivable, this starting rotation. Now, let's make no bones about it. It's not, you need some of these guys, not all of them. You know, I don't need all five of them. Outside of McLean, you need somebody else, at least two other guys to take a step forward. And maybe that's Peterson. Maybe that ends up being Jonah Tong. Maybe then that ends up being the guys in, you know, Minaya, Senga, you know, Clay Holmes is, you know, moved to the back end or moved to the bullpen. He becomes an answer, a solution. Familiar role dating back to his days of a year ago or even before that with the New York Yankees, Pirates, and all that. So maybe you go down that route, but you've got to start to resolve this starting pitching issue for the New York Mets because it is a glaring issue. Let's head out to Oklahoma. It's Jeremy. It's the fan. What's going on, Jeremy?
Yeah, what's up, Mark?
Jeremy, hey, how's Oklahoma? Where are you in Oklahoma?
I don't know. I'm driving somewhere on I-70. I think it's probably like in the panhandle area.
All right.
I guess that's what they call it. It all looks the same out here. But anyway, Senga cannot make another start. There's no doubt about it. Let's say they send him down to the minors like Alvarez, try to fix what's going on with him, fix his mechanics, fix his hamstring. Whatever's bothering him, he can't make another start. I mean, bring up your kid's throat. Let him take his place. McGill's coming back, but they got to send him down to the minors if they can fix him. If not, just keep him down there because he's killing his team.
Jeremy, can I ask you, are you driving like a truck right now? Are you at a truck stop? Where are you in Oklahoma?
I'm driving a truck.
You're driving a truck. So you drive truck, you haul across the United States?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That is, I give you credit, Jeremy. That's a very, very difficult job, man. We appreciate you listening to the fan, but that's a difficult job. What's the best like truck stop that you stop at? Like that has like the best food that you like when you're driving across the country you look forward to?
I like the Flying J. Flying J, they usually have some hot food.
Okay.
Breakfast. They usually have some dinner. They have greens, actually, you can eat, so it's not all that bad.
All right.
So you can eat up. Brian Jay will give you some nice hot food.
I got you. Well, Jeremy, drive safe, man. You listen to the Met game every time that you're on the road?
I try to, but sometimes it's just too frustrating. I got to just start it off.
And you listen to music, podcast, whatever it might be. I got you. Yeah, it can be frustrating.
Well, yeah, Jeremy, man.
Drive safe, all right, man? Appreciate everything you do, all right?
Yeah. I appreciate it. Tell me about Sanger.
Well, listen, yeah, I don't disagree. I don't think it's survivable. I mean, to be honest with you, like I kicked off the program at 10 a.m. this morning on this, holiday midday, and I don't know. You've gotten this conversation from the Mets about Sanger for a while here about working his way through. When you have a manager telling you that he's non-competitive, and then when he competes in the strike zone, they hit everything hard. That tells you all you need to know about where he is. And you can't continue to roll him out there hoping for something to change. Results are results. I might look at Senga and say, well, where's the starter from a year, earlier this season? Or where's the starter from his rookie year? And when the ghost fourth pitch and everything that we talk about, well, that guy is not here in the here and now. And you can't continue to roll that guy out there thinking that the next start is going to conceivably be the better when every result that you have seen in recent memory since coming off that IL, for the most part, the majority of the starts, I'll couch it that way, have been bad. Yesterday was a game, and I understand that you wanted to see. If you lose to the Marlins yesterday, like we talked about the Yankees, right? So the Yankees come off a loss yesterday, and you want to beat the White Sox. And you're frustrated that they left 10 on base. You're frustrated that they, 1-5 with runners in scoring position. Frustrated by the fact that Tauchman steals a home run from Giancarlo Stanton early in the game and you lose the game 3-2. The positive coming out of that game, maybe as a caller called up earlier and said, well, the bad call, strike three on Bellinger and Judge popping out, in the top half of the ninth inning. That's a game you got to win. Okay, fair. Positive coming out of that game is heel. If we're sitting here on this Monday, and the Mets lose that game and drop 3 or 4 to the Marlins, which you don't love, but they dropped 3 or 4 from the Marlins. But Senga pitched 6 innings of, say, 5-hit, 2-run baseball and had 6 or 7 strikeouts and took a massive step forward. You take the L and you'd look at the positive. You compounded the problem by not only losing the game, not only looking lifeless offensively, but Senga being non-competitive. To where the manager not guaranteeing starts here moving forward, and rightfully so. It is a results-oriented business, and he's been bad. And when the manager's saying that, that means they've probably exhausted all options in terms of trying to figure it out, and the patience is worn thin. 1221, Melusis with you, 888-808-1019. Jack in Brooklyn's up next to the fan. What's going on, Jack?
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
Good, Jack. How are you?
Good. First of all, enjoyed all your time with FAN, all your contributions over the past 2 or 3 decades. Really great stuff.
Thank you. I feel old now, Jack. Thank you.
No.
Yes.
Quick thing. You tell me if this pitcher deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, okay? It's really unbelievable. His 11 years he pitched, 2.9 ERA as compared to Seaver's 2.8 and Greg Maddux 3.1. 152 complete games, averaged 266 innings pitched, 40 shutouts, and on god-awful teams in the 60s and 70s. You think that person belongs in the Hall of Fame?
How many career wins?
I'll tell you right now, career wins 164, 139 losses, but god-awful teams. 152 complete games.
Wow, 152 complete games. That's crazy.
And he averaged 266 innings a year.
You know, Dog used to crack out the baseball encyclopedia, go year by year.
This is unbelievable.
Do we go out there and do that? I don't think we have that anymore.
Supposedly the classiest guy around, pitching coach for 20 years, including a World Series team, and his name is Mel Stottlemyre. Never got a sniff at the Hall of Fame with a 2.9 ERA, almost the same as Seavers and better than Greg Maddux. I never understood that.
Well, right, but then you have to factor in I understand we marginalized wins for starting pitchers, but at one point in time, wins actually meant something in Major League Baseball. Didn't win enough. Yeah, I mean, he had a very good career.
Got a sniff.
Yeah, I never looked, great way to point it out. Did I look at Mel Stottlemyre as a Hall of Famer? I think we've blurred the lines of what the Hall of Fame is all about. And I think the conversation was a lot more interesting when it came to the Hall of Fame than it is now.
Sure, sure.
When the records meant something before the steroid era really obliterated a lot of the majority of the hitting records and the power records in cross Major League Baseball. So.
But
in today's day and age, do I look at Stottlemyre? No. I mean, but if you're going to couch it and say, well, in today's day and age and era, should you maybe go back and look at it based on what he was able to do, the amount of complete games that he threw, that he was on terrible baseball teams, all those things? Yeah, you could factor those in.
Yeah.
I'll look at Stottlemyre as a Hall of Famer, though.
Really? Even with a 2.9 ERA?
Yeah,
better than Maddux and the same as Seaver.
No, I get it, but I mean, Seaver won 300-plus games over the course of his career.
I realize that. Games. I realize he was a lot better teams than the Yankees of the 60s and early 70s. They were horrible.
Yeah, bad teams. I get it. I understand, Jack, and good call and appreciate it. Let's head out to Rockland. It's Artie. It's the fan. What's going on, Artie?
Oh, how you doing, Moose? Thank you so much for taking my call. I've been on a tirade. I played center field at a pretty high level. And this guy is a butcher in left field, Dominguez. There's no question about it. But do you know? Do I know? Does anybody know whether he's a similar butcher in center field where his skill set plays a lot more with his speed? He might be the fastest runner in baseball. He can outrun any baseball in center. The angle is different. I tried to play corner positions after I played center for years. I hated those corner positions. They push him into left field. Is he a butcher in center field? Do you know that?
I would imagine he's better than what he is in left field. I didn't play center field when I was playing, and probably not to the level that. What level did you play at, Artie? Triple A?
Well, I played in the Sandlots in 64, okay? And I was one of the best ball players. I played 4 years ahead of Rod Carew for the Cavaliers and the Bronx Federation League.
Okay.
Ken Singleton played in that league.
Nice.
I was a tremendous center fielder. I had the speed, I had everything. When you play center field, the ball comes at you so easily. It's easy to judge it. I have a feeling that as a center fielder with his speed, skill, he probably plays center field much better than he does left.
Artie, I appreciate, can I tell you something? I appreciate the way you speak about yourself as a baseball player. Very, very confident.
I was really good. I'm 5'6", though. I'm 5'6", and I'm left-handed. So I never grew. And I couldn't hit like a major leaguer, not for power.
I
was an absolute beast in center field. I played softball into my 60s, and into my 40s I was still playing center field because I had the speed. I'm telling you, center field. Roy White called up
a couple
weeks ago.
Yeah, center field and left field is different. I can't answer, I didn't scout him in the minor leagues. I can't tell you how, I would imagine he's, Artie, I would imagine he's better in center field than left field.
Will they give him a chance in the future to be the future center fielder for the Yankees at 22 years of age?
What's the question you're going to ask yourself is, what exactly is the Trent Grisham future with the New York Yankees following this season?
I hope it's no future. I hope it's no future. It's a joke what he's doing this year. That he never batted above 200 the last 3 years.
How is it?
That's an anomaly.
It depends on what he's looking for. I mean, or maybe a guy just finds it. I mean, we're not looking at a guy that's 37, 38 years old having an outlier kind of a season. Maybe Grisham's found it. And certainly, his swing does play at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. But, I mean, I wish I was able to watch it. I was MVP of my, the Pearl River Lions at Old Anderson Field in Pearl River, New York. So like probably my one claim to fame is like when I was a baseball player. It was double A, and I was on a great team. I was the MVP of the team. Still have the ball signed, by the way, by all those guys. It's sitting down in my basement. My kids tried to basically grab it and play with it a couple weeks back. I basically held it like it was signed by Babe Ruth. I was like, please don't touch the ball. And I'm not really like one of those dads, but that was basically it. That was my claim to fame athletically right there. And then I got called up to the majors, to the worst team in the majors. As and you know, I think I was like a year early, got called up. And the team I got called up to was the Mets. They were terrible. Not trying to insult Mets fans, but they were a bad baseball team. We were a bad little league team. But it was fun. And then you're playing with older kids, but never played center field. And never, I appreciated your confidence talking about yourself as a baseball player. You know, I'm not, I can't speak to that level of confidence. So I was playing in the Sandlot League. I could man center field. I could go gap to gap, had the speed, all that kind of stuff. Lefty power, everything. I appreciate that. I mean, it's good stuff. Bruce in Flushing's up next to the fan. What's going on, Bruce?
Hey, Moose. I want, before I get to my Yankee points and my football Giant points, did you ever check on why Ohtani is not classified as a pitcher?
I did not, Bruce. I did not. I will get to work on that. Next time I'm on the air, I will. Or maybe I'll try and address it before the end of the show this afternoon. All right?
Okay.
You got it.
Because it definitely gives the Dodgers a distinct advantage. Yankee points. Whatever happens this year with the Yankees, at least the Yankees have developed two young stars in Rice and because these guys are legitimate young stars.
I would agree, Bruce, that Rice has been, and Rice can also go play first base catcher, and you have to be nothing but impressed with Schlittler, correct?
Secondly, but a guy who was killing Tim Hill, left-handers off Tim Hill is hitting 160 with a bunch of strikeouts. So Hill's doing his job. Plus, for Richard, the Yankees are getting Yarbrough
back
as second left-hand.
Yeah.
That's that. On football Giants, let's you and I play a game. We're going to play a game. When does Jackson come in as a starting quarterback? And I'm saying whether by injury or ineffective performance, I say game four, home game against the Chargers would be the perfect situation. Figure if the Giants are either 0-3 or 1-2, Dabo is going to say, okay, it's time to make a change because I need to have a good year. Agree or disagree?
I think that's a little early. I would say I think if Wilson gets hurt, Winston's going to start.
Yeah, but by game four, he's got 3 or 4 weeks of practice, and if they're 0-3 or 1-2, you don't think Dave's is going to say, I need them to do something to change the course of the season?
Yeah, you know what? I'll give you the game that I think realistically, Bruce, is the game that I would circle on the calendar. I would circle December 14th home against Washington.
No, way before that. Way before that. Especially if the Giants are losing, Davis is going to say, I need to make an impact.
To save my job? Bruce, yeah. That would be the worst thing. I don't think we're in that position here. Like, if this perception of Dable's hot seat being as hot as people make it out to be, the Giants moved up into the draft to draft the guy that they loved coming out of Ole Miss.
I think
that he wanted to work with.
I understand that, but
he pinpointed. So now I'm going to compound the problem by not giving him the time to be able to work through it. And do you think that now all of a sudden Brian Dable, the pressure is so hot going into the season that he feels like he needs to do it that early in the season, home game against the Chargers?
I understand you want to give Russell Wilson a shot. I understand that. But by the fourth week of the season, if the Giants record is negative, I think the kid can step in and play. I could be wrong. I understand that. But I think this kid can step in and play.
But why is there the need? I guess my question, Bruce, is why is there the need to rush it when we know the future is there? Why is there the need that you need to rush it? Because of the here and now mentality we have, because of what you saw during the course of the preseason. The Giants have told you they're playing the long game. Why the need to go rush and get Jackson Dart in?
Because this team has a defense that can bring this team to playoffs, at least defensively. And if Wilson's playing well, fine, I get it. But going in, I don't expect Wilson to play well over what he's done the last 4 years. With the kid, I think this kid has shown me enough that Wilson's not playing well, that I put him in the number two spot, especially by the fourth week of the season. He's got a few weeks of practice. I roll the dice.
Yeah, I mean, Bruce, but you have to understand the reps in practice. Okay, and you're not alone. There's a lot of Giant fans. I mean, Dart represents a lot of hope. I bring up the December 14th game, and the reason why is the Giants have a bye week before that game, and it's a home game. So, like, that would work, where you'd give him extended time, first-team reps, based on everything he experienced this year. Now, obviously, timelines can change, but that's why I brought up the Commanders game late in the season in the month of December. I could change injuries, obviously, the way Wilson's playing at quarterback, the win-loss record. There's a lot of factors that come into play. The Giants have been pretty clear here. They're not rushing it. There's been no leaks in the building. There's been, they've remained steadfast that Russell Wilson is the starting quarterback. I think he's going to be the starting, nothing has changed from that, from draft night through mini camps, through OTAs, through, training camp. Nothing has changed. If Wilson stays healthy, he's going to get an opportunity here. And I think with, the Washington game and the Dallas game, and then you get Kansas City and then it's Los Angeles. I mean, you're looking at a scenario going into that game, home game against the Chargers where, I get the rumblings are going to get louder and louder if this season, the quicker this season looks lost. That comes along with it because the quarterback looked good during the course of the preseason in Dart, and you want to try and win under that rookie contract, and you want to see and get him the vast amount of experience. The other factor that you want to throw into the mix as well is you want to make sure Thomas is healthy at left tackle. That's the other thing too. The last thing you want to do is throw him behind an offensive line that is subpar. And with the news over the last, 72, 96 hours, drawn into question whether or not Thomas will be ready week one, whenever Thomas is ready, you want to make sure he's in there as well when you've got your prize prospect in Dart in at quarterback, whatever that is during the course of the regular season. Results, injury, performance, obviously a number of factors that come into play. We'll see exactly what the timeline is and if indeed he does start a game this upcoming NFL season. Dove has got some NFL picks coming up later on this hour. I'm looking forward to those selections. I asked him, I pushed him a little bit. We're working
pulling
on Dove.
Teeth.
We're working on Dove's brand. So we're going to, we're going to go with some selections. He's got some picks later on this hour. Team total over Jets and Giants. We'll get Dove's selections, whether he's bullish, bearish, wherever it might be. And is he feeling optimistic or pessimistic? Isaiah's as well. Dove, excited?
Because we'll just get Isaiah's too. That's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hop on the mic. No question. Tom in Johnson City is next up on the field. Where is Johnson City?
Right next to Binghamton.
Ah, beautiful. There you go.
Gorgeous area. Hey, look, first-time caller to the Fan. I listen all the time, but first time to call. Two quick things. First of all, I haven't seen the Giants live in 15 years, but I'm headed down to D.C. this weekend. What are the chances that I'm going to see a Giant win?
I think the Giants are winning that game down in Maryland. Now, if you're in Washington, D.C., you won't see it. If you're in Maryland, you'll see it.
Okay. I'm in Landover. Close, though. Close.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, very close.
Thing.
Yeah. Did you see they tore down RFK the other day? They're obviously...
No!
Yes, they tore down RFK.
Oh, that's terrible. Okay. The second thing, this will be the most unusual question you get today. When Boone comes out of the dugout after a win, he turns over his right shoulder, raises his fist, home game, away game. I can't believe his family, his wife, goes to every game. Who is he signaling to?
I have no idea. You're the second person that has called me about that. I got a call about that, a couple weeks ago on a Sunday morning show where I'm usually on.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I don't know. I think home game is probably family. I have no idea. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Maybe a fan or somebody connected with the organization will hear this and call in. Cause I'm curious. Every game. But, hey, hopefully you're right. The Yankees are going to come through with a good stretch against these tough teams, at least 500, and move into the playoffs on a positive note.
Yeah, you'd like to see them over the course of the next 12. When anybody couches, I agree with you, Tom. And thanks for the call, and safe travels, and enjoy the opener for the Giants down in Maryland as they take on the Commanders a week from yesterday. Always strange when you're taking calls here on WFAN and someone is about to sell you, they couch the call or couch the question by saying, I've got a strange question for you. Like, you never know exactly, the hair on the back of your neck stands up. You get a little bit more, you're never sure where the caller is going to go.
Give me your top three strange calls in your whole career here at the Fan.
Oh, top three strange calls that I've ever had at the Fan. Let's see. Number one would be when Jackson was born. I got a call my first show back after my oldest son Jackson was born. Had a caller call up and was curious why we picked the name Jackson. And
it's not so strange.
Well, no. And then he promptly went through many guys that had the name, either the first name or the last name of Jackson, to see if I named my son after that individual. And said, well, did you name your son after Michael Jackson? And I said, no. What about Reggie Jackson? I said, no. And then promptly, and this happened at like 3 o'clock in the morning, right, where we've got all the time in the world, and promptly ran through like 10 or 12 different individuals, either the first name or the last name of Jackson, before I just said, we like the name. Like, that was basically it.
Did Keith get the same quote when he named his son Jackson?
Probably not. Probably not. I don't know. I forget the name of the caller. I'll remember his voice when he calls up. I mean, strange calls that I've gotten. I mean, we've had Dan in Deal, New Jersey. He proposed to his wife on the overnight. We set it up. Now they've got, I think they've got three kids. He calls on occasions on Sunday mornings. Dan and Dale, lovely couple, but he proposed to his wife on the overnights when I was doing overnights. Let's see, another strange one. I mean, outside of the prank calls, I mean, we've had numerous ones. What do you got, Rosie? Rosie's in there chiming in with
something. He's saying Nadine.
Oh, Nadine, yes. Yes, Nadine in the Bronx, yes. Who's still to this day the cremated. Yes. Not a highlight. It's really not. I understand it. It helps out the morning show. Not a highlight. You know, it's just, and everyone, like, you know when that one came back where it was a misstep? We were at LaPresti's wedding, and my wife and I were at LaPresti's wedding. Beautiful place. We were at like some chalet in Jersey. It was, and everybody was there, and whatever, and having a good time. Acosta was there. Ernie Acosta, the former producer of the Midday Show, had that call saved on his phone. And we were deep into the night, and basically was playing that call over and over again to everybody that was in attendance, and everybody as. You know, guys are having shots and enjoying themselves and having their favorite libation and celebrating. Everyone was just listening to that call over and over again. And then Donna turns to me. She's like, why didn't you tell me about that call? It's hilarious. I go, it's not exactly a career highlight. Like it's not exactly something you go to. Like it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. The caller mispronounced cremated and kept on saying cremated. And I couldn't stop laughing. But people to this day continue to bring it up. But yes, that did happen. So yes, Nadine is another one. And I think I accidentally, it was another caller that I called up that asked, who started the conversation talking about the fact that they no longer could see, they lost their, and I asked them about whether or not they liked the new look of the Islanders jerseys.
Nadine in the Bronx, you're up next to the Fan. What's up, Nadine?
Hi, Mark.
Nadine, good morning.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about the Giants, but first I wanted to say something about, September 11th.
Sure.
Yeah, on that day I don't know, I was going out with my mother and father, because my father, I told you, passed away 2 years ago.
Right.
And my mother's in the nursing home now, but those, way back 8 years ago, I went with my mother and father, we took a trip with the Jewish seniors from Co-op City to Atlantic City.
Okay.
On that day. And I was on the New Jersey side, and I actually saw the buildings with the smoke coming out of it.
Unbelievable.
I mean, I couldn't bear it.
Unbelievable, Nadine. So you were on your way to AC.
Yeah, and okay. I could have played the slot machines then. I didn't even eat.
Yeah, it was, very emotional, highly emotional day, Nadine.
Yeah, I didn't expect that to happen on that day, you know?
Well, who could have?
Yeah. I actually saw when I came home and what happened. And I actually saw that ball of flames, you know, on the side of the building, on the bridge.
Oh, you saw it actually happen? You saw it with your own two eyes?
I didn't know what that was at the beginning, but then I saw on TV the fireball coming out, I think, of the North Tower, I think.
Yeah, of the second plane hitting the building, right.
Yeah.
The second building getting hit.
Yeah. Now let me get to the Giants. The Giants, I think they're going to do good. I think they're going to win. I think Eli's going to have a good game. I think Eli will have three touchdowns.
Yeah, let's go to this is not.
Three touchdowns.
Passes, yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, there you have it. Thank you. That was one of the many Nadine calls on the overnight. This is the one that everyone enjoys.
Well, the Giants play. Well, the Giants, right, on Channel 4, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that would be Giants, Cardinals, Yankees. I mean, you'd have to. I mean, if you're a Met fan, maybe you'd be locked in that Giant game. But Yankees, huh? Angels for a Game 7. Well, we'll see, weather permitting, if they play Saturday night. Nadine, what was your mother's name?
Marilyn.
I'm so we're thoughts and prayers go out to you, Nadine, all right?
Yeah, they're going to be cremated. Well, my father was cremated 2 years ago. My mother's being cremated today, and they're going to be throwing the ashes out into the ocean.
Well, hang in there.
What? What's the matter?
No. Russell just said something in my phones. Hang in there, Nadine. No,
Russell's now a cop on Long Island.
They'll be together in the water. You know? Hello?
Nadine, I'm sorry for your loss. Nothing. Russell just said something in my ear
It's very uncomfortable. Nadine, legend. Thank you, Rosie, for finding all that stuff. Appreciate that. Thank you. Beacon Falls, we go. It's Michael. It's the fan. What's going on, Michael?
Mark, first of all, I want to tell you, I'm a huge fan of yours, and thank you so much for taking my call.
You got it, Michael.
I've been truly, though, I can't believe I got through to talk to you. I've been listening to the fan since I got out of the Marine Corps in 87. And in my opinion, is Mike Francesa and then you, as far as the whole picture, the whole ball of wax. Francesa, then you. And I felt that way forever.
Yeah, Michael, I appreciate that, man. That's a really high compliment and means a lot, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think you're amazing. Okay, so I wanted to ask you your thoughts on the, because I've been a Cowboys fan since 76, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on the Micah Parsons trade and just the Cowboys in general this year for, how they're going to be and so forth.
Yeah, Michael, I would say the Packers addressed a glaring area of need. Second-year defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley, the former head coach with the Boston College Eagles, came over last year. They had a massive issue of getting after the quarterback. It's a win-now situation when you look at the Green Bay Packers. The big question you have, and I think Micah Parsons is going to be rip-roaring, raring to go.
They're looking for a guy that can
get consistent pressure to help out the other levels. I love their other linebacker in Cooper, former star Texas A&M. Offensively, I think you've got everything you're looking for. Really good offensive line. Golden at wide receiver, the star out of Texas, who they draft in the first round. Jacobs, year two, coming over from the Las Vegas Raiders. The big question when you look at Green Bay is going to be, what version of Jordan Love are you going to get at quarterback?
Right. I 100% agree with that. But I was wondering what you thought about how Dallas is going to be.
Yeah, for Dallas. And listen, I was critical of it, Michael, when it went down.
Oh, you were?
Yeah,
you were,
I was. I know there's a number of Cowboy fans that feel like, well, didn't show up in big games, maybe a little selfish, couldn't stop the run. The Cowboys got a guy, Kenny Clark, that's going to be an asset along that defensive front, Michael. That and all of this, I don't think it's great.
I don't think it's great when you
draft and develop a guy that's clearly a premier edge rusher, and then you let him go and you move him on from him at 26.
Yeah, it truly made no sense to me whatsoever. But I know nobody really talks about it too much, but I think the one of the huge problems with Dallas forever has been Dak. And I'm not kidding when I say that. He's completely overpaid, and he's never accomplished anything.
Yeah.
Literally. He's never accomplished anything, and I never hear anybody, basically critique the guy. And
I don't think that's necessarily true, Michael. I think he's gotten his fair amount of criticism for the amount of money that he's getting paid, but they were in a scenario where they had to pay him, and Dak had all the leverage at that point in time. So he deserves it. Now it's really going to be on that offense. When you look at CeeDee Lamb, George Pickens, running back room a little bit better. I love Blue, or I do like the rookie out of Texas, Blue. I think is going to get some opportunity. He's got some big time speed. Suffered a little bit of a hamstring injury during the course of training camp, but the offensive line, not nearly the same. But they're going to be very reliant on that offense, putting up points week in and week out, and that's all on the quarterback.